1001 Songs with me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. Now, this week on 1001 Songs, I've got... Well, we start off with The Beatles and Please Please Me, and that's from 1963. The Beatles' second single, Please Please Me, was written largely by John Lennon, inspired by Bing Crosby's 1932 hit Please, which Lennon claimed had been a favourite of his late mother. Other influence is... included Roy Orbison's Only the Lonely, which was then a hit on radio. The Beatles cut the track in their second session with Parlophone and needed to rearrange the song significantly to avoid comparisons with Roy Orbison's sound. Indeed, this is the Beatles' trademarked Mercy Beat sound, the hyped-up energy from years of playing clubs, the harmony vocals, and the next sharp licks from George Harrison's guitar. Please Please Me confirmed that the Beatles were not a quick fad, and also confirmed that their unique ability came from being able to meld rhythm and blues with traditional popular song. And this is the Beatles, and Please Please Me. The Beatles and Please 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 Me. There was only meant to be two pleases in there, but I thought I'd just chuck in an extra one for good luck. Right here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And also, if you don't happen to be listening to us on the internet at www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Here, 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, or at least that's what Toby Cresswell, who selected these, wants you to think. My name is Seth Tetley-Jones, and I'm looking at his songs and presenting them to you in a very nicely audible package. And they are his selection of songs are not, in fact, the top 1001 greatest songs of all time. What they are is the songs that he thought would quite broaden your palate, and that over his experience in the music journalism business were very good songs and quite worth listening to. Whether they were good or bad, they just said something about popular music. The next song which says something about popular music is Bonday by Ale Farkaturi with Rai Kuda. Most of Mali is Sahara Desert. Timbuktu was once a great trading city and is now a shadow of its former self. Mali is one of the poorest countries in West Africa. Here we go. And blighted by poverty and AIDS. The music of Mali is rich with French, Arab, Moorish, and African influences. Into this mix comes the particular talent of Ali Faka Touré. He began playing guitar in 1956 at age 7 and developed a style of his own sounds to Western ears not too far removed from the rural blues of Lightnin Hopkins and John Lee Hooker. Essentially, his tunes set up a drone and a groove that he embellishes on the guitar or with other instruments. American guitarist Ry Cooder made the trip to Timbuktu with bassist John Petitucci and drummer Jim Keltner and blues guitarist Gatemouth Brown to play with Touré, who brought along his cousin Hamas Sankare on calabash and his brother Omar Touré on congas. Over the course of the album Talking Timbuktu, Touré sings in a number of languages, none of them English, with a warm, expressive style and lets the groove do the talking. Absolutely sublime music that transcends time, space, and nationality. And this is Bondé by Ali Faka Touré with Ali Faka Touré. It's a very, very difficult name to get the vowels right on if you say it fast. Ali Faka Touré with Ry Cooder.
Wanna dare?
That was Ali Farka Touré with Rai Kuda there and Bonde. And you're listening to 1001 Songs, and this is Waiheke Radio, and I'm Seth Tetley-Jones, and this is A Sailor's Life by the Fairport Convention from 1969. In America, the rock groups were taking traditional blues. In America, the rock groups were taking traditional music, blues and country, and exploding it. In that spirit, singer Sandy Denny, drummer Martin Lamble, bass player Ashley Hutchings, and guitarists Richard Thompson and Simon Nicol formed the Fairport Convention to do the same thing with English folk. The climate in Britain at the time was bad music a la Gino Washington and blues bands, and a sheen of psychedelia was creeping in over the top, said Thompson. By the time we turned professional and we had what might be called a psychedelic audience, you'd have a light show and attempt to recreate a kind of environment that was being so successful in America with Fillmore's and the Avalon Ballroom. Audiences were basically fashion conscious. Probably the same since about probably since about 65. We've been playing the odd British traditional tune, and when Sandy joined, she brought her fairly good traditional repertoire that she'd been singing around the folk clubs, and we started to incorporate that into what we were doing. There was a certain amount of scholarship in it. We thought that because we were British, we should be playing indigenous music. This was something at which we could excel, whereas we may never excel at being second-rate B.B. Kings or third-rate Waylon Jennings's. We also saw that there was a need for traditional music in this country to be revived. It was unpopular with British people. We wanted to bring it up to date. We were white liberal intellectuals, I suppose. Vocalist Sandy Denny was already a veteran of the English folk scene when she joined the Fairport Convention. One of the songs she brought was a very old tune full of moral complexity. A Sailor's Life is a love story in which the sailor is the romantic figure who loves and travels on. One woman, however, follows him to her own doom. Denny learnt the song from Martin Carthy and taught it to the band backstage at Southampton University. Fairport Convention took the song and ran with it. Richard Thompson and Simon Nicol stretched out their guitar parts, competing with David Swarbrick's violin. A sea shanty became an epic voyage and a grand passion. The tune runs for over 11 minutes. It completely refashioned Fairport Convention and the sound of British music. Fairport Convention and A Sailor's Life.
A sailor's life, it is a merry life. He robs young girls of their heart's delight, leaving them all in a row. My true love, he makes the finest choice.
father build for me a bonnie boat that on the wide ocean I may float, and every queen
the Fairport Convention, and a sailor's life. Here on Waiheke Radio, you're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. With me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. Songs, of course, are selected by the opinion of a certain journalist, whose name is Toby Cresswell, and he's got an idea of which songs were, you know, changed the course of pop music and are quite worth listening to, because you think, well, that's how that works then. I think that's his idea anyway. Anyway, the next song which he's selected is Led Zeppelin and When the Leave Breaks. On their fourth album from 1971, and he's put there, appears on untitled fourth LP. I can't remember quite correctly. I think most people just call it Led Zeppelin 4. But maybe Led Zeppelin 4 is actually Led Zeppelin 3, but I, or something like that, because you know what these things are like. Usually they're complicated, and most bands, when they try and give something numbers, they tend to end up going backwards or something. And well, that's just what I've noticed. And because I haven't, because I'm just one of those people who quite likes Led Zeppelin, and I haven't actually researched it and looked at the list of albums and what order they came in, I couldn't tell you for sure. But actually, I should do that now, shouldn't I? Yes, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that while I'm playing you this song. But firstly, let me tell you a little bit about a song. Zeppelin created their masterpiece, one of the high points of rock music, having spawned heavy metal and then gone bucolic the year previously. On this untitled album, they pulled all their influences together in an entirely new way. The album was recorded at Headley Grange, a three-story Victorian workhouse. Its large stairwell became the drum booth with a microphone two stories up. John Bonham particularly shines here. The closing track, When the Leave Breaks, is the biggest and heaviest drum part in all of rock. It's twisted blues-like Howlin' Wolf on steroids. I recall Paige and I listening to Electric Mugged at the time by Muddy Waters, said bass player John Paul Jones. On one track is a long, rambling riff. I really like the idea of writing something like that, a riff that would be like a linear journey. The idea came on a train coming back from Page's Pangbourne house. From the first run-through at the Grange, we knew that it was a good one. Bonham's slow, insistent groove is unique and was one of the most popular drum samples in the early days of hip-hop. And here we got Led Zeppelin and When the Leave Breaks.
We'll be right back.
Led Zeppelin and When the Leaf Breaks from their album Led Zeppelin 4, which, here's one for you. It was the first album to make it onto the first Led Zeppelin studio album, to be a bit more specific, to make it onto the top 40 charts in New Zealand, and that did that after it was released on the 8th of November in 1971. And, however, having said that, you're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and also you might be listening to us on the internet, which is waihikiradio.org.nz. And this is 1001 Songs, and I'm Seth Tetley Jones, and these songs are selected by Toby Cresswell, and this song is The Pretty Things and Don't Bring Me Down. They were not pretty. The group, led by singer Phil May and Dick Taylor, was the dirtiest R&B group in London in the early 60s. Taylor's claim to fame was that he was almost in the Rolling Stones. Having gone to school with Mick Jagger and sharing his love for blues, Taylor was rehearsing with him when Jagger started playing with Keith Richard as Little Boy Blue and the Blue Boys. Shortly afterwards, Brian Jones came on the scene and they became the Rolling Stones, while Taylor drifted into the Pretty Things with May. From early on, they prided themselves on their raw interpretations of blues. The Pretty Things found themselves on Fontana with producer Bobby Graham, who helped them translate their urgent, rough sound... it's a record. Excuse me. Songwriter Johnny D gave them a straight pop song, Don't Bring Me Down. Taylor wrote a nasty blues guitar part, and the rhythm section gave the track a pumping beat with a funky swing to it. May's vocals were appropriately robust, enough to get the song banned by US radio. Although the song was a huge hit in the UK, success elsewhere eluded them. They were, however, a major cult band in America and Australia. David Bowie covered Don't Bring Me Down and another Pretty Things song, Rosalind, on his EP Pin-Ups, and has always cited them as a major influence. By and large, however, the Pretty Things were too far out. The thing about the Pretty Things was, we found, in people like Jimmy Reed and Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters, a kind of kindred music that we could identify with. Oh, it's a quote, says May told Richie Unterberger, but we weren't respectful in the fact that we didn't copy it. We played it fast because we were 17, 18 years old, so the urgency where we were standing was overlaid on basically songs about being marginalised and being fucked up by society, and that's what was happening to us. It was just, well, where we were, where we stood in society, which, being art students, was right on the fringe, and we were outside of society, so the music, we just added some kind of thrash metal to it, and we put some urgency into it, and we played it at a speed which early godfathers of British R&B said, ah, disgraceful. And this is The Pretty Things and Don't Bring Me Down.
I'm on my own, just on a roll. Yeah.
The Pretty Things and Don't Bring Me Down. And this is YU Radio 88.3, 107.4. And we've got the Jeff Beck Group with Beck's Bolero. Track 8th of the album Truth. Beck's Bolero is a seminal moment in British rock. It was worked up in Jimmy Page's living room with the Led Zeppelin guitarist and his future bassist John Paul Jones. I should be able to say that by now. I've been in radio now for nearly a year, and I should be able to say John Paul Jones. In fact, I think it will be coming up to a year next week that I've been doing this show. I mean, minus that little sabbatical I took, which I'm quite pleased with. You know, I've done maybe nearly 30 shows now, which is, you know... Sorry, I just was having a moment. And anyway, where were we? John Paul Jones, Keith Moon, who named Zeppelin, on drums, Nicky Hopkins on piano, and Rod Stewart singing. These were the characters who would shape British music for the next decade, and this notion of improvised progressive rock was the sound of the future. But this particular supergroup didn't last beyond that session. Unbelievably loud and hostile, the arrogance and ambition that runs through Beck's Bolero is announced in the style of British rock was being born. Unfortunately, Jeff Beck's difficult personality meant that he was unable to keep this group together long enough to fulfill his promise. Back then, put together his first Jeff Beck group, Rob Stewart, Ron Wood, and Mickey Waller, and cut an album in 4 days. Producer Mickey Most was the master of British pop and steered the sessions away from Beck's more progressive interests. Hence, you have a remake of Beck's hit with the Yardbirds, Shapes of Things, and some NAF standards, Old Man River and Greensleeves. There was so little money available, and I don't think that Mickey Most even wanted to bother, but we had this act, so all we had to do was go in there and get a decent sound and play it. Rod just had to open his mouth around a mic and you had a song. It was a shame we didn't follow through. And this is the Jeff Beck Group and Beck's Bolero. Oh, that's not good.
Thank you.
What was with all the glitches in the first 30 seconds? I'm not quite sure how I managed to get those in there, but I remember I said to the machine, I said, one more glitch, and we're moving on to the next track, all right? So behave yourself. And you know what? That worked. So there we are. You can talk to computers and they listen to you. Well, usually they don't, but on that particular occasion, it did. You're listening to Waiheke Radio on 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and this is 1001 Songs, and this is the Memphis Jug Band, and Stealing from 1927. Generally just called Stealing. That's like, as in without the extra stealing on the end. This song was part of the lingua franca of the folk and blues scene in the early 60s. It was recorded by every singer with an acoustic guitar: Bob Dylan, The Grateful Dead, John Sebastian, and literally all of their contemporaries. The Jug Bands were one of the first versions of a blues combo. They started in Louisville, Kentucky, around 1900. Jug music was so called because there was generally somebody keeping time by blowing across the opening of a liquor jar. Early jug bands included a mixture of fiddle, banjo, mandolin, and guitar. The most well-known of the jug bands was Gus Cannon's Jug Stompers. Cannon was born the son of a slave on Henderson's Newell's Plantation in Marshall County, Mississippi, in 1883. He made his first banjo from a guitar neck and a bread pan and played in dances and juke joints around the Mississippi Delta at the turn of the century. By the time the armistice had been signed after the Great War, Cannon was plying his trade in the traveling medicine shows or playing in the Beale Street, Memphis. Beale Street, the birthplace of jazz, was also populated by whorehouses with names like the Castle of Missing Men, where cocaine, reefer, and easy virtue could be obtained at reasonable prices. Cannon's Jug Stompers, with Noah Lewis on harp, began recording in 1928 with a Noah Lewis song called Minglewood Blues, which was covered by the Grateful Dead some 50 years later. Cannon continued recording and playing until his death in 1966, by which time one of his songs, Walk Right In, was a hit on the pop charts. One of Cannon's chief rivals was the Memphis Jug Band, led by Will Shade. The Memphis Jug Band was the most recorded group of its era. They cut Stealing on the 15th of September 1928, crediting the song to Gus Cannon, although he never recorded the song himself. It remains a fine piece of stompin' blues around the hook. Put your arms around me like a circle round the sun. The rawness of the Jug Band in their rhythmic strength had a natural affinity with rock and roll, and nowhere better, perhaps, than on Stealing by the Memphis Jug Band. The
bee. Stealing, pretty mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old you. Stealing, pretty mama, put your arms around me like the circle around the sun. I want you to love me, mama, like my easy rider done. If you don't believe I love you, look what a fool I've been. If you don't believe I'm sinking, look what a hole I'm in. Stealing, mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old used to be. I'm stealing, pretty mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old used to be. Thank you. woman I'm loving, she's just my height and size. She's a married woman, come to see me sometime. If you don't believe I love you, look what a fool I've been. If you don't believe I'm sinking, look what a hole I'm in. I'm stealing, stealing, pretty mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old used to be. I'm stealing, stealing, pretty mama, don't you tell on me. I'm stealing back to my same old used to be. Tell on me, I'm stealing back to my same old used to be.
The Memphis Jug Band there, and Stealing, Stealing, right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Now, this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them with me, Seth Tetley Jones. And I think we've just about got time for one more song, and it is David Bowie and Suffragette City. David Bowie raised the stakes in 1972 by declaring NME to the NME, "I'm gay." He has subsequently remarked it was the best thing he ever said. There is an irony in a heterosexual man claiming to be queer, but it was a great publicity stunt. Bowie then invented himself as a character complete with a concept album, while the other rock stars of the era were struggling to get out a dozen songs. Bowie was playing on a whole new field. I think it's one of those instantaneous vision things you get, said Bowie of his inspiration for the concept album. It all came to me in a daydream about what this whole thing was about. Character Ziggy Stardust was loosely based on an American rock and roll singer, Vince Taylor, who'd moved to Paris and become something of a cult figure. Then that was added to the legendary Stardust Cowboy, singer of Paralyzed, I often thought to be the worst single ever recorded. There was possibly also a nod to Iggy Pop, who was one of Bowie's idols at the time. This pastiche of rock iconography was tied into the science fiction storyline. What mattered in the end was playing on the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Suffragette City was a homage to the Velvet Underground. Lou Reed's driving guitar was mimicked and embellished by the more adroit Mick Ronson, who added the sweetness and light to the mix. He provided this strong, earthy, simply focused idea of what a song was all about, and then I would flutter around on the edges and decorate, said Bowie. Suffragette City rocked. It was pure energy. At an early performance, Bowie dropped to his knees and gave Ronson's guitar oral pleasure, which not only looked exciting and dangerous, but added to the already loud furore of Bowie's sexuality. Ziggy Stardust made Bowie a superstar. "I packaged totally credible plastic rock star," said Bowie. "Much better than any sort of monkey's fabrication, my plastic rocker was much more plastic than anybody's." And this is David Bowie and Suffragette City.
Hey man, leave me alone, you know. Hey man, when I get off the phone, I got to, hey man, I got a spit on my face. This metal that chick's just put my spine out of place. Hey man, my school is insane. Walks down the drain. Hey, oh, she's a total blam blam. She said she had to squeeze it, but she and then she all on me, on me, man. 'Cause she can't afford the ticket. Back from Suffragette City. Oh, don't lean on me, man. 'Cause you ain't got time to check it. No more Suffragette City. What's all I say?
baby, don't be unkind, go away. Baby, I can't take you this time, go away. Baby, did you get, don't crash here. There's only room for one. Here she comes, here she comes. Oh, don't be only man, cause you can't afford the ticket. Back from Suffolk City. Well, don't be only man, cause you ain't got time to check it. You know my Suffolk City is out of sight.
This is David Bowie and Suffragette City, and this has been 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, right here on Waihi Radio, 88.3 and 107.4. I will turn up again next week at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, and of course my repeat at Saturday afternoons at 2 p.m.